it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I mean, look, it's always hot the first part of September just because Labor Day passes. It's the emotional end of summer. It doesn't mean that these summertime temperatures don't still hit us. So it's still pretty hot. Got a chance of some rain today, but it is it's going to get better, and we'll have some cold fronts through here before long. I'm Scoot on the air. We had a really good discussion going last hour. We're going to pick that up a little bit later in the show, but we've got an important thing to talk about in the meantime with scheduled guests. So I couldn't continue with that topic, but this loudmouth host on Newsmax mouthing off about how the NFL is woke. It's gay, it's queer, it's transgender. How? I mean, I don't get it. And there's, more talk now about boycotting the NFL. And I think this is just designed to rile people up. That's it. It's mindless. But we're going to continue the conversation coming up a little bit later. So stay with us. So this 11-year-old boy who wanders away from home and about 2 weeks later is found dead, and the cause of death is an attack from an alligator. And you and I have just such horrific, vivid images of that. This child was apparently on the spectrum. And now the mother has been arrested for child abuse and some other things. I wanted to find out a little bit more about this, but here's the tragic news of this 11-year-old boy being killed by an alligator after wandering from home, and the mother gets arrested. Chief of Detectives Nick Gernon is in our studio. Good afternoon, Nick.
Good afternoon, Scoot. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for coming in. And victim witness assistant unit supervisor Lucinda Wilson is also with us. Thank you for being with us, Ms. Wilson.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having us.
Yeah, because you've got resources that could be very valuable for some people. So Nick, just tell us why this woman was arrested.
Yeah, so as New Orleans has really followed this, and it's been a very heartbreaking case for all of us to deal with, our officers, the neighborhood, the community, and Brian's family, right? He got out. He was able to get out of his house on August 14th. Like you said, he was on the spectrum. He was nonverbal, and he kind of made his way through his neighborhood, and 12 days later, the Cajun Navy found his body in a lagoon in his neighborhood. He had obviously been attacked by alligators and subsequently drowned. A real horrific, a tragic, tragic.
So incident. Sad.
But when our detectives, our child abuse detectives, started looking at this case, it wasn't, this one instance of tragedy that led to his death. There was a series of abuse and neglect. And it wasn't something that we could, ignore. Like, we are duty-bound to investigate these deaths. And when we started to see the abuse and neglect over his entire 12 years, from the time when he was 3 months old, his mother had, been convicted of cracking his skull and collapsed lungs and some broken legs on a three-month-old, right? All the way up until 10 days before he got out of his room and was subsequently died, he had gotten out of the house and they had to go find him. So the tragedy is that this could have been prevented. And what we're hoping today is that not so much to focus on how he died, but on what resources we have in our city to connect people to the services they may need so that the next Brian Vasquez doesn't end up like he did.
Because kids just by themselves are a tremendous challenge.
Yes, yes.
And you get angry with kids.
Yeah.
Kids on the spectrum are even more difficult to deal with, but abuse can never be the answer. Ms. Wilson, are there resources for people who feel like maybe they're on the verge of abusing a child because this child is just not acting a certain way?
Most definitely. There is, of course, the well-known agency, which is the Department of Children and Family Services, often referred to as DCFS. And within DCFS, is a program called FINS, which is Families in Need of Services. And generally families, you know, especially maybe a family of a low income, would seek those services and get exposed and get under an umbrella of services that would address that child's needs, learning needs, mental health needs, financial needs, food services needs. All of those things come under that umbrella, under the Department of Children and Family Services alone. That agency has enough services to see after that family, to manage that family. And then, prior to a case escalating to what Brian Vasquez's case has done, then there should be managerial services, family visits, home visits, to monitor those things to maintain that child's safety in place.
It sounds like this is very hands-on, that you're
correct.
Very active.
It should be.
Okay. Now, do you actually get calls from people who say, I can't handle my child? Or, you know, what I'm afraid of is that there are resources that the government offers, but the people who need them most don't reach out to take advantage of those.
And that is the case a lot of the time. We're located within NOPD. And even with that, when it's not a special needs child, we get families that walk in and say, I just don't know what to do with them. I don't know how to handle them. And we make referrals to counseling services, find out try to get to the bottom of the case. Sometimes we find out it's not so much the child maybe being bullied at school, and they get home and put that displaced anger on the parent. The parent didn't even know that the child was being bullied. So there are different resources for different issues and different circumstances. But certainly in the case of a child who has special needs, there is a number of resources. And like I said, it would begin with that school. Even the schools offer resources. They have independent, individualized programs tailored to meet that child's needs within those classroom settings. They have on-site counselors at the schools to deal with the children and to assist the families. So a few years ago during National Crime Victims Rights Week, we had a thing of see something, say something, and it's been picked up across the country. But that's what it takes, ears and eyes of everybody in the community, in the schools, in the homes, to notify and to let others know when something is taking place that doesn't seem to add up or doesn't seem to be in the best interest of that child, that child is kept safe.
And Ms. Milson, I think you should probably clear up this misunderstanding. I don't want people to feel like if they report that there's a child one of their children is really difficult to deal with, that the protocol is not to first take the child away from the family. The protocol
Absolutely
is to work
not.
With the child in the family.
Absolutely not. A DCFS goal is to maintain the cohesiveness of a family. And that's why the first line of service is generally the FINS program, Families in Need of Services. You want to try to keep those children in their homes and maintain as much normalcy as possible. So you want to go through those services. You know, by the time a child reaches foster care, then that child has become in imminent danger and there's a great deal of neglect or abuse or something taking place before a child reaches foster care and having to be withdrawn from that home and adjudicated to the courts.
So, Nick, in the case of this 11-year-old boy who was just ultimately killed by an alligator, the abuse goes back to when he was 3 months old in this house?
3 months old. And there's been a pattern of abuse and neglect. And I give credit to the other adults in his life. They noticed it and they spoke up and they even reached out to us after he went missing and said, hey, we knew there was something wrong. We made the appropriate reports. They made referrals. And so there will obviously be some reviews of this to see what could have been done to prevent this from happening, to prevent this from neglect, to leading to his death. But what I also kind of don't want to lose sight of is that this is a very complex system, and a lot of folks are like, well, where do I start? Like, if I have this going on in my life, who do I call first? The New Orleans Police Department, under Ms. Wilson's supervision a few years ago, embedded social service workers and social service professionals in every district. So if you need to start somewhere, you can go to your local district station and explain, just say, hey, I need to talk to
you
the social worker.
Just walk into the police station.
Walk into the police station. I need to talk to the social worker. We have them at headquarters. We have how many, Ms. Wilson, total? Well,
collectively, the New Orleans Police Department has 26 social workers that are working for the various departments. That includes juvenile, special victims, which is domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse, along with the district social workers, which we're based under homicide.
We thought it was important to put them in the community so they could be accessible to the community.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
So when those, so anytime, and it's an everyday thing, we have individuals walk into the stations. A social service worker is on site. And that desk duty sergeant or whoever is there can call upon that social service worker to come out and speak to the family, to the parent, whoever is reporting, to offer them resources and assistance.
And Nick, when they walk into the police station, I don't want them to fear that they're going to be arrested because of what they're reporting. Unless the child is being beaten.
Is in danger. And look, if you walk in and ask for help, we're here to help, right? It's protect and serve. This is part of the service that we think is expected by our community and that we're happy to give, because I don't want another Brian Vasquez, right? Yeah. I don't want another family that's bearing a child. I don't want another family that is, you know, now having to go through the legal process where we're having to arrest somebody for what could have been a preventable death. So that's our goal today, is to send that message that there's resources out there. All you have to do is help, ask for help.
We would much rather refer a family member to resources, if it's food, if it's utilities, if it's housing, refer them to a referral, you know, to a source of that nature, rather than to a source requiring burial assistance.
You know, I mean, we pay taxes, so if the government can help us free, can help us do something to help us with our families, because you know, these kids didn't ask to be born into these situations. No child asked to be born with autism. And it's very – I've been watching some reality shows based on people on the spectrum, and it really is fascinating. In some ways, they're so brilliant, and in some ways, they're just so antisocial. They don't know how to do things. But – Nick, in the case of coming in and asking for help, if you know the mother who's been arrested of Brian Vasquez, if there's a pattern of abuse, should something have been done sooner?
It's a good question, and it's a question that we're asking internally. It's a question that our partners at DCFS are asking. It's a question that we're going to have to answer, right? So this tragedy has to be avoided. It can't be repeated, and the only way we can do that is by doing a look back to see where were balls dropped. We know that not everything was handled perfectly with Brian's case, with every other kid's case in the situation. We're looking to always improve. But we can't wait till we develop a perfect system to make sure that people know that there are things out there they can do. And our social service employees, our social workers, our social service investigators, they're like problem solvers. You know, you bring them some issue that you're having in your home, in your family, with whatever the issue might be, and they'll help you figure out how to crack that nut, if you will.
I didn't know there was a social worker at every police station, every district
every
office.
District. Yep. Actually, there's 8 district stations, and we have 10 social service workers in those 8 districts. Both our 7th district and our 5th district stations have 2 social service workers embedded.
If any of you listening have any questions about a situation within your own family or a situation with somebody in the neighborhood or somebody you know or somebody in your extended family, if you have any questions, text a question to Ian. And the Open Heart text line is 504-260-1870. It's 504-260-1870. 260-1870. Text a question to Ian, and we'll get some of these questions to Chief of Detectives Nick Gernon in our studio. Also, Victim Witness Assistant Unit Supervisor Lucinda Wilson is in our studio, and we'll try to answer some of those questions. You know, it's an important issue of child abuse, and something might have been done to save that 11-year-old boy who was killed by an alligator.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, so much more can be done to protect children from abuse. And, you know, hey, look, we all know that kids can get out of hand and kids can, you know, be, you know, their own little person and not listen to you. And sometimes you just get so mad at them, but you can't abuse them. And we're talking in particular about the case of the 11-year-old boy who was wandering away from his home, ended up being attacked by an alligator, found dead about 2 weeks later. And now the mother has been arrested because there was a pattern of child abuse. Now, I have been corrected. There's no official word from medical doctors that the child was on the spectrum, that he was autistic. He could be autistic. That is a strong possibility. Or his behavior could be the result of a brain injury that he received when his mom abused him. So, Nick, this is really, you know, serious, and I would hope that the investigation at NOPD would yield an alert that more could be done earlier on in these situations.
We're still waiting for some medical reviews, but we certainly know that he suffered a traumatic brain injury during his first documented instance of abuse. And there is certainly evidence that tends to suggest that might have been the reason for his developmental deficiencies rather than, you know, autism. But obviously, we got to let our doctors do their work before we can, you know, kind of present that to a court.
Are there other children in the house?
There were. And yesterday, a judge issued a stay-away order so that in the event that Ms. Vasquez is able to bond out, she cannot have contact with those children until, you know, this case can be resolved.
So what's going to happen to her?
Well, the district attorney's office will review all of the evidence that our child abuse unit collected, and then they will make the appropriate charging decision. Right now, we arrested her for second-degree cruelty to juvenile and negligent homicide. We think that we have enough evidence to support those charges. The DA's office will be the next step. They're going to review it, and then they'll decide how to proceed from there.
Nick Gernon is a chief of detectives at NOPD, and victim witness assistant unit supervisor Lucinda Wilson is also with us. And Ms. Wilson, I was just really surprised to hear that there is a social worker at every police station in every district at NOPD. And if somebody is really having problems with their child or their children, they can actually walk in and ask for help free.
Absolutely. As I said earlier, there is a social service worker in every district. There are two social service workers in both District 7 and District 5. Parents, family members, anyone can walk in and receive services. Just let that district station manager, supervisor know what the need is, and they can summon the, for lack of a better word, the social service worker to come and speak to that family to find out what kind of resources is it they're looking for, what is it they need. Sometimes it's behavior issues. Sometimes it's runaways. We see the number of juveniles that run away daily. And sometimes it's a simple issue of why that child is running away. Sometimes they're running away from something, but all of that needs to be known and addressed, and we can assist with resources for that.
If somebody comes into an NOPD station and reports abuse of, say, within their family, not their immediate family, but within their family, or maybe somebody in the neighborhood, can they do this anonymously?
Absolutely. The DCFS has a confidential hotline that you can call, a number that you can call, or you can fill out a complaint or a report online as well.
Can I give the number?
Yes.
Give the number?
That number for child abuse or neglect is 855-452-5437. Again, that's 855-452-5437.
Now, if somebody reports this anonymously, you know, obviously when somebody goes to the door, they're probably not going to be met with any kind of congeniality. There's probably going to be some rejection, like there's nothing going on there, there's nothing wrong here, you know, I know how to handle my kids. What do you do in that case?
Once DCFS meets with someone there, they are able to go in and do an assessment to see and determine the validity of a report that they've received. They make that determination. Based on that determination, whoever that field worker is, that child protective service worker, they may order what's called a forensic interview to be done with the child advocacy center. So that's one means of getting, you know, once they go in. And what we have to realize is that, and this is one of the things they tell us in with DCFS, is that my standards of living may not be another person's standards of living. So it's not what your standard is, but it's the needs of the child. If the needs of the child are being met, right, then that may not negate or warrant a valid complaint.
All right. Ian's got a couple of text messages, so let's read some of those texts and get you, Nick, and you, Ms. Wilson, to respond.
Here's a text message that says, I understand it's not a perfect system, but this case gave all the signs, and the family also did their due diligence. Why is it so tough to diagnose an issue like this? What would be the obstacle?
You want to answer that, Nick?
I kind of couldn't hear him.
Okay, what would be the obstacle? Since there were so many signs, mm-hmm. What would be the obstacles in the way of doing something sooner?
Yeah, so some of that is going to cause me to kind of comment a little bit on DCFS, which, you know, they have their own standards and protocols. When we receive these complaints of abuse and neglect, obviously our child abuse unit investigates it and determines whether there's enough to warrant a referral to court. In this case, she was convicted for abusing Brian when he was an infant, and then those patterns of neglect and abuse continued, but some of them did not rise to NOPD's attention, right? So they were going to other agencies that might have been that are responsible for the follow-up on that. I will say, though, that there were adults in his family, in his life, I'm sorry, that saw what was happening and did make proper reports. But sometimes those reports just didn't rise to the level of criminality or, you know, abuse. So, you know, we are all taking a hard look at this case to see where we came up short. And it's just part of our internal review. And it's really difficult for us to kind of, you know, work through that.
Okay. Ian, got another text?
Yeah, this isn't necessarily a question, but I think it raises a question that you can answer. Texter says, I'm a mother of an 11-year-old boy, college educated. I consider myself to be extremely proactive. I found it very difficult to convince my OBGYN that I was experiencing postpartum depression. I had to literally beg for help. I never harmed my son, but I understand the slippery slope that could lead to it.
Ms. Wilson?
And that's not uncommon. And I don't know this individual personally. You have to be your own best advocate when it comes to situations like that. And when you don't have that, if you're unable to verbalize it yourself, then that's the time for you to reach out to an outside source for mental health services. You can even Google something. It may not be that direct person that you're going to end up with, but it'll give you an idea of which direction to go to seek those services if your primary care doctor or if your OBGYN is not hearing you. Not to veer off to another entirely different subject, but we know, I just was listening last week that Louisiana has the highest rate of infant, you know, mortality. And it's a lot of times the doctors don't listen to the mothers or the patients and really hear what we're going through as women. So be your own best advocate.
And Nick, I can't help but once again bring this up. I'm sure there are a lot of people that are going to be afraid or apprehensive about going into a police station and saying, look, you know, I've got a problem with my child and I don't know what to do. Or maybe something has already happened and they're kind of scared. And what can you say to them to reassure them that they're not going to be arrested on the spot? I mean, obviously, if you go to the house or something and the child has, you know, a broken arm and a broken leg, well, that's a whole different story. But I want to encourage people who are on the cusp of being involved in a situation that could lead to abuse to come in and ask for help.
Yeah. And when you go to the police station, you're not going to be talking to the police, right? You're not going to be talking to a police officer, a commissioned officer. You're going to be talking to a professional social service worker, right? So that's the distinction. We embedded them in the police department and in the police districts because there's a police district throughout the entire city, right? We didn't want them all centralized downtown or headquarters or city hall. So we wanted them out there in the community where the community lives, works, and plays. But when you go into the station, it's just that's where their office is. And we thought that that was a good place so that people would have that opportunity to connect to folks so that not having to take, you know, two transfer buses downtown to meet with somebody on Forger Street.
Yeah, no, this is really great. And a lot of people don't know this, but the social worker being at every police district in New Orleans is so important. And let me give you this number again. If you want to call to report child abuse or to talk about something within your own immediate family, the phone number is 855. Is that right? 855?
Mm-hmm.
855-452-5437. 855-452-5437. Let me also mention that there's going to be something that's happening for the first time. The Victim Witness Assistance Unit is presenting an inaugural Day of Remembrance for Homicide Victims. It's a remembrance walk. It happens September 25th at Bunny Friend Park, and it's from 5 until 7. And you can RSVP by going to VWAU, that stands for Victim Witness Assistant Unit, then socialworkers@nola.gov. And this is an opportunity for people to get together and bond over the loss of a child.
Loss of a child, loss of any family member, friend. If you want to come and in remembrance of that family, friend, bond with different partner agencies that we work with as well. We encourage those that are coming to bring pictures of their loved ones that have been lost due to homicide. And we will have others throughout the community, clerical leaders, political leaders to come and support you in this National Day of Remembrance for Homicide Victims.
I'm going to hold this, and I will mention this again on the show a couple of times between now and September 25th. Lucinda Wilson, I want to thank you for coming in with the Victims Witness Assistant Unit. And Chief of Detectives Nick Gernon, it's great to see you again, and thank you for coming in. I love your boss.
She's amazing, right?
Things are good. I've run into her a couple of times just walking in the quarter. I've run into her, and she's just so gracious and so willing to have a chat with me.
Yeah. Thank you, Scoot. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Right. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. All right. If you want to join us with a comment this afternoon, the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line is 504-260-1870. You know,
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Raising kids has a lot to do with your self-control. And look, I know, you know, you're busy and the kids are misbehaving and you've got 10 things on your mind. You're under a lot of pressure as a parent. And many of you are single parents. And it's really tough. It's difficult. It's a tough job. And nobody has one handbook for raising a child. And everybody raises their children differently, and that's okay as long as there's no abuse. I'm really glad that Nick Gernon, Chief of Detectives, and Victim Witness Assistant Unit Supervisor Lucinda Wilson took time to be in the studio with us to just bring some awareness to child abuse. And I couldn't help but think about this in the case of this 11-year-old boy, Brian Vasquez, who was ultimately killed by an alligator after wandering from home. is he on the Autrum spectrum, or does he act in a way congruent with the head injury that he received because his mother abused him? And I'm glad that NOPD is investigating this case and trying to figure out why something might not have been done sooner that might have helped the mother. And then Lucinda Wilson telling us, and I think this is great, that there is a social worker at every police station in New Orleans. In some cases, there are two there. And you can walk in if you have problems, or if there are problems that you think exist in your family or with a neighbor, you can walk in and anonymously report that. I'll give you the number again in just a moment, but I thought it was important to just take a little time to address the issue in light again of that 11-year-old boy being found dead after he was attacked by an alligator after he wandered from his home. The mother has been arrested on charges of abuse. So if you want to call this number, you can report somebody, or you can ask questions about your own family. Don't be shy. Don't be afraid to reach out. And if you're a young professional and you're raising a child or two or three, and you are just absolutely overwhelmed and you don't know what to do, and sometimes it gets to the point where the action you might take might be child abuse, you can't take that step. You can spank your children, but you can't beat your kids, and you need to know the difference between the two. So here's the phone number if you want to report something or if you want to ask a question about something that might help you. The number is 855-452-5437. 855-452-5437. We have a lot of fun on this show. We talk about a lot of stuff, and a lot of the stuff that we talk about is just, hot political debate, but it doesn't affect our lives that directly. But sometimes we just have to stop and use the show to talk about something that is important. And I'm glad we had a chance to talk about that. So I want to get back next hour. I want to get back to this conversation about this conservative TV anchor boycotting the NFL, saying that football is gay, football is queer, and football is transgender. And this host is like calling for a boycott of the NFL. He's boycotting the NFL. He wants you to boycott the NFL. And, the boycott didn't work before. I mean, when the boycott was supposed to be at its height, people were still watching the NFL and the ratings were still out. So we're going to talk more about that in the next hour. First of all, I don't think football is woke. Being aware of things like ending hate, ending racism, I don't think that's an example of being woke. Certainly it's not an example of being too woke. It's using their massive appeal to promote things that we need to promote. And as Ian pointed out a few minutes ago, when they had end racism in the end zone, if that bothers you, you are the problem. And I know you might say, well, I go to football to see football. That doesn't change the game. End racism in the end zone doesn't change the game at all. And if you're against ending racism, then you're for racism. What the hell are you doing there if 75%, this was the last figure that I remember reading, if 75% of the NFL is black? What the hell, if you're a racist, what the hell are you doing there? I mean, you're a total hypocrite. So, again, those things, people love to just bitch and complain about things, but those things should not bother anybody. And if you're bothered by it, that's a problem. What's in the end zone is not the problem. The fact that you're bothered by it seems to be the real problem. All right. Also, we're just going to touch on this today, but President Trump, we started talking about it yesterday, but didn't have time. President Trump is going to direct the Department of Education, which he wants to totally get rid of, to come up with new guidelines to bring prayer back in schools, as if this is the answer to our problems. I don't believe it is. And when you invite prayer in public school, you invite Satan in public schools as well. Do you want that? And what prayer is read? If you're an evangelical, you don't want Catholic prayers read. I'm not speaking for everybody, but in general, if you're an evangelical, man, you don't have a lot in common with Catholics. If you're Catholic, you don't have a lot in common with evangelicals. So there's just a myriad of different genres within the title of Christianity. So which prayer gets read? And then what about a Muslim prayer? What about other prayers, Hindu? What about Jewish prayers? You know, why would that be excluded? So, see, that's the danger of bringing prayer back in public schools, because you have to allow others to come in. And the Supreme Court's already ruled on this. You know, your kids can pray. Your kids can pray. Nobody can stop your kids from praying in school. Your kids can join a prayer group after school. It's just that the teacher can't lead the prayer, because the teacher in public schools represents the government, and the government should not be leading us in prayer. If you want to join us, the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line is 504-260-1870. On the Scoot on the Air calendar, the song was released on this day in 1971, and to this day, it still resonates. Great, great song. I'm Scoot. It's Tuesday afternoon, and we'll be right back on WWL. On the Scoot on the Air calendar, on this day in 2007, during her performance at the MTV Video Music Awards, Alicia Keys was performing, and Tommy Lee and Kid Rock got into a fight, which encouraged presenter Jamie Foxx to denounce white-on-white violence. Kid Rock and Tommy Lee in a fight. I wonder what they were fighting about. Probably Pamela Anderson, because they were both, you know, with her. They knew her in the biblical sense of the word to know. All right, coming up, we're going to continue the conversation that we started earlier about whether or not the NFL is woke, and in what way is the NFL actually woke? And if the NFL promotes certain things, what's wrong with that? And are you for a boycott of the NFL? We'll be back on WWL.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.